Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
John Williams Show. Thanks, Steve Bertrand. Justin Kaufman in for John Williams. Mark Baser's here. Hi, Mark.
Hey, how are you?
Good to see you, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
You're not doing the interview show this Friday. You're doing a different show. You decided that the interview show is played out.
No. This is the interview show presents.
Oh, really? Never mind. You decided you needed bigger.
Expanding the brand.
You're a brand guy.
Yeah.
That's great.
Which has attracted three people, three ticket sales off of that.
You're more of a door guy. You didn't need pre-sale. You're not a pre-sale guy.
You know, we switched about a few years ago from all door to pre-sale.
Yeah.
And it went from being the most nerve-wracking thing, because you don't know who's going to show up at the door, to like the second most nerve-wracking thing. Because now you have a month to worry about. Yeah,
right.
I'm constantly calling the guy and be like, how many tickets do we sell? Can you post it on Facebook?
Do you have a non-mind-bending thing or non-stress-building thing? It seems like everything would build stress for you.
Somebody today gave me some CBD oil that I could spread all over my neck, but they told me that it would make me smell really bad. So that is also nerve-wracking. So, to answer your question, Steve.
All right, well, Mark Baser, we're going to talk about your show, and we'll also talk about your hometown of Oak Park in just a second. I want to get to the callers who have the answers for my mind-bending Avengers Endgame question about what is the endgame for the box office? How much can you make in the United States on one weekend if you sold every ticket and showed in every... What is the endgame for Hollywood? Let's go to Chris. Chris, what do you think? Chris, what do you got?
Well, firstly, I just wanted to say, if you turn the calculator sideways, that makes the E go away, so that would have made it a little easier to read the number.
But
the hugely inaccurate number I got from your calculation was about $5.04 billion.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's what I've seen in my quick summer when I tried to do it. It was somewhere around 5.4.
But if the tickets were like, if 3 out of 4 tickets were sold that were for Endgame, then couldn't you just divide the number that Endgame made by 3, then multiply it by 4?
Well, Chris, it was great talking to you. Thanks for joining.
What about people who buy a ticket for another movie
and then
walk into Endgame?
Yeah,
think about that.
Yeah,
or exactly. Stay for the next showing. Just spend the whole day watching it over and over again,
there's
crying during the last hour.
There's a lot we didn't factor in. Thanks, Chris. Stay on the line.
Yeah, okay.
So true. It is so true. But that's the number that seems... there's also a lot of texters who got to the same number. The number was... It's all unscientific because there's a lot of estimating, and then I just chose the factors of the math equation. There's some mathematicians who text in who said, that's not the way you would do it. And I'm like, I know. But in this case, we're on a radio show.
It's AM radio. It's not University of Chicago.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I do.
What about the money from people who film it in the back and then?
Yeah, you're not factoring in black market Canal Street money.
Yeah,
right. All that kind of stuff.
Along with a pair of socks.
You get a pair.
We'll slip a copy of Endgame into that pair of socks.
A VHS copy of Endgame.
I miss those socks.
Yeah, Mark. So you have the show coming up. Let's talk about that first, and we'll talk about Oak Park.
Sure.
You've decided to do something different. So this is called "I'm Ambivalent Towards the '90s."
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Well, so my friend and I, a musician friend who lives in New York, who I met in the 90s in college here, decided that we wanted to do a show together. And we thought, well, this is where our friendship was birthed in the 90s. It's also where, here's what happened. A few years ago, I was doing my show and I was interviewing this woman she was a teenager at the time. Her name is Tavi Gevinson. Yeah, right. She's a blogger. She was a fashion person. Now she acts on Broadway. She was already a big deal at age 14.
Right.
And she said to me that she liked to go back and study fashion from different decades in history. And I said, oh, that's interesting. What decades? And I think you know the punchline. Like she said, the 90s. And I was like, what? What are you talking about? That's yesterday. And then it's not. It's history. 90s are a long time ago. And I think for a lot of us who kind of came of age during the 90s, and also used to think of it as this kind of glorious, nothing was wrong era. I don't know. It's kind of interesting now to kind of contend with that. Was it a totally peaceful? Nothing was wrong. Were we ignoring things? Was our, I mean, Generation X, I don't really play up to cliches that much, but was our not, were we not caring about stuff right. in the way we should have cared about stuff? So the show is a bunch of music. It's David playing different songs from the 90s. And then a bunch of people reading essays, a very hideout show, about themes in the 90s. So one person, Mick Dumpke from the ProPublica, is doing something on politics in the 90s. Claire Zulke, who does a show at the Hideout, is doing something on the internet, because it was really the last decade right. before our lives weren't controlled by the internet, but it was there. Monica Ang from another radio station is doing something on food in the 90s. She covered food in the 90s at a time when that was still, like, it was Charlie Trotter's world.
Yeah, right.
You know, but there were plenty of other things going on. So Monica, different themes.
Monica did the story, and it might have been 2000s, but she did the story on nacho cheese sauce in the schools, because they were pouring nacho cheese sauce on everything.
Yeah.
And acting like it was there was nutritional value.
Even on the assignments.
They were. It's like, yeah. That was a big thing. It could have been the 90s and CPS as well. But yeah, that's, it is interesting for you personally. You come of age. I mean, we met in the 90s.
Yeah, we're the same age. We're the same talking age. About.
But what does the 90s mean? Are you nostalgic about that time?
Well, I'm trying not to be. I'm trying not to be in the show. I don't know that I am. I'm regretful of what I wasted in the 90s, I think. I've slept a lot during the 90s. And I see people now who are doing a lot of things when they're in their 20s. And I'm like, God, maybe those four-hour right. naps on Saturday weren't the secret to success. I am nostalgic, though. I am. And I'm trying not to be unabashedly so. And I'm also trying to kind of look at where I shouldn't have been nostalgic. For example, it was a time when a lot of my... I think I formed who a lot of my heroes were. And some of those heroes have not worked out so well. For example, I discovered Woody Allen in the 90s. I thought he was great. I wanted to write like Woody Allen. And now Woody Allen... I can't separate my enjoyment of the work. I do. Mm-hmm. But he's... highly problematic. Yeah. So I was kind of wrestling with those kind of themes as well. I'm going to do none of that. I'm just going to make an intro and then go drink at the bar while other people...
That's really what this is.
Yeah,
this is
it's a way to take the month off, right. to tell you the truth.
Well, it is... I wonder about it too, because I think about, like, for instance, both of us have done comedy. And we did. I did a lot of comedy at Second City and around Chicago in the 90s. And the tone was different.
Yeah.
And we see this from comics who no longer want to go to college campuses because they feel like it got over.
Chris Rock
PC.
Has said that. Seinfeld, whose birthday is today, said
but,
that.
But the truth was, the late 90s, there was a very cynical, there was cynicism was running through our blood in the way that it almost felt like that was the kind of comedy that everybody was gravitating towards.
That's right. And I guess the question I'd ask of them is how much of, I mean, on the one hand, I totally empathize and side with them. On the other hand, I think we're just maybe being lazy. So Gina, my wife, who, you know, she's also reading, wrote a piece for it. She's and she made an interesting point also about Chicago in the 90s, which is, I don't know, when I moved here in the 90s, it was still kind of that last vestige of that old Chicago that, like, I mean, I still love Chicago hot dogs, but back then it was like Chicago hot dogs, Blues Brothers, Walter Payton. Like, that was still like the guy in the L collecting
right,
your money.
Right, right.
Like, and the 90s were kind of that period where the city said, we want to be a global city. We don't want to be that kind of great, but cliche version of our past,
right.
which I also think hopefully people will.
And there's,
deal with.
There's something about it, too, that's a great observation. And it also was this moment where, and I know Mick will point to it, but this was the Daley administration, the Mayor Richard M. Daley time,
yeah.
where it was just that there was not a, as we know it now, like factions. There was straight up, you voted for Mayor Daley or nothing.
Yeah, the machine was still, nobody was talking about the last right. days of the machine.
And they held on tight to what they wanted Chicago to be.
There was a convention then, too, right?
1996.
Yeah, so we were revisiting. It was kind of a weird, mm-hmm. like, Chicago's not going to do what we did in 68 kind of thing,
right.
too, which was also...
So you have the politics, which is, and a huge scandal, people forget. Silver Shovel was in the 90s, where
right.
aldermen were being bribed to dump industrial waste in different abandoned lots in some Chicago neighborhoods, and aldermen went down for that. There were
that's right.
5, 10 aldermen that got arrested for that stuff. And then I think about the media here in Chicago. It was very strong. You had the newspapers were huge at that time. You had Oprah Winfrey was on the West Side and what is now the West Loop. It was
all of daytime talk, right?
Yeah, right.
Donahue, who's the Jenny yeah. Jones.
Jenny Jones.
Yeah.
All that stuff.
Remember people used to stay at the hotel right on, what street was that? Right downtown here for the Jenny Jones show. And there was a diner there and you'd go in there and you didn't have to go watch the Jenny Jones show because they'd be performing basically at lunch.
It was the Cambridge Inn, wasn't it? Was that what it was called?
Yeah.
The
yeah.
diner?
Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome. It was like, there's not the gas for the show.
Hey, you want to see
acting
Jenny
totally
Jones?
Crazy.
Well, let's just go to the lot. Let's go to the diner.
Yeah, get a grilled cheese.
Yeah, it was a good diner.
Yeah, it was good.
Mark Baser's here. His show, I'm Ambivalent Towards the 90s, is going to be at the Hideout this Friday night. We come back. Let's talk about Oak Park.
Sure.
Yeah. There's a little bit of controversy brewing, at a middle school.
It's usually it's only at the middle schools.
Only at the middle schools. It's John Williams. I'm Justin Kaufman. In for John. We'll be right back. Texter says, 815 says, buying for another movie and sneaking into another one doesn't work anymore because now it's reserved seating. That's a good point. They're messing with your flow.
That's true. Some Mark. Theaters, not Some all theaters. Theaters.
You search out the ones that are still free-for-alls.
The one where I live is a free-for-all.
I don't want to get off on a tangent, but the one thing I will say is when you have such an anticipated movie experience like Avengers Endgame, for someone who has watched all the movies and has an 11-year-old son, it's anticipated. There's a lot of anticipation. Every moment of this three-hour movie matters. So the Jamoke who shows up 10 minutes late with his iPhone light on trying to find his seat and then unsuccessfully asking someone to move because he thinks it's in their seat, but it's not, but it's one back. Unacceptable.
Why don't we treat it like the opera?
Right.
You can only come in at a new scene.
I don't mind if it's Fast and Furious or some other garbage movie, but the Avengers Endgame, we're waiting on this. We've been waiting for a year on this.
My 13-year-old saw it and then told me what happened.
You're like, thanks.
Thanks, Dad.
The other thing that happened, this is blow your mind. I'm in the theater. It's Friday. So everyone's all excited. Everyone's ramped up. This is the first showing, like 4:40, 5 o'clock or something like this. Everyone's like, you know, this is it. This is it. Guy comes in. He does his little spiel now. You got the guy at Arclight who tells you all the cool things about who's in it and don't go out that exit and blah, blah, blah. Half hour, 45 minutes in, woman walks down the stairs. The whole theater is watching her look at the emergency exit, walk towards the emergency exit, and open the emergency exit door.
Ugh.
And it goes, pew, 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 right in the middle of Avengers Endgame.
And what happened?
They quick, luckily, because I think they're now savvy to it,
yeah.
The bell's 5 seconds. And then it's over.
The other thing that's unfortunate about it is, I don't know about you, but like you start thinking about bad stuff that happens, that's happened in theaters people pull that kind of stuff.
Well, we all watched her. We knew.
She was not dangerous.
She was just like, she had a thing of popcorn. She's like, where do I put it? Where do I go to the bathroom?
Yeah, if you're going to do something dangerous, you don't have the popcorn in your hand.
But it was just like, I mean, you're trying everything you possibly can to not be taken out of the moment in this moment because it was such a highly anticipated film. And so littlest things like coming in late, looking at your cell phone, going through the emergency exit, which you could let go in any other situation, it stuck with me.
I don't want to go out to things now because things I really am looking forward to sometimes. I know Steve Bertrand will think I'm becoming nerve-wracked again. But I feel like if somebody throws me off, then I'm out. They've ruined it for me.
They ruined the whole narrative.
Yeah, they've ruined it.
The memory will be
shaded. I'm sorry the movie was so bad for you.
I was one more thing about movies. I went on a date night with my wife, and I was like, okay, this is something. I haven't gone to a movie at 9 o'clock at night in a long time. I have an 11-year-old son, so most of the movies are going to be earlier, right? So you're playing with a more family-friendly. Sure. This was one of those movies where you can recline the seat, maybe get a beer.
One of the movies.
Yeah, not the movies, the theaters, right? And this guy, the people next to me, they show up. They bring food in from outside. But it's not like the kind like you and I would sneak like some raisinettes in from the Walgreens.
It's like a steak.
It was a takeout with the white plastic bag with the styrofoam things stacked.
Yeah.
You know, like that you would see a delivery guy bringing like five over, like, and it was Chinese food. and I couldn't believe it. I'm like, I really was like, I was the first time ever in my life. I'm like, what is the rule here? Is there rules in this place? I'd like to see the rules for AMC. I'd like to see the rules.
Were they like passing it back and forth to each other?
It was like six people, and they brought dinner.
Was somebody coming around to refill their water every few seconds?
That's what I was hoping. I was like,
oh, all this stuff happened to you this weekend?
No, this was a pass.
Oh, okay.
How many films did you see?
I saw 6 hours of my life was taken by the theaters. But I'm just saying, like, that experience, now I'll never go to a theater. I'll never go to a date night after 9 o'clock at night.
Justin, do what I do. I ask myself, will I have a better time if I go out or just stay home and look at the wall? And, you know, half the time it's just a wall.
Okay, so let's talk about Oak Park. This is something that was in the news this week about a mural at a middle school.
Yeah.
A mural that has been, it's a WPA project that was put up. It's a winter mural that shows the kids skating and having fun. But the problem is that the kids in this are all white.
So, yeah, it's actually at my son's school. And it's interesting from a personal standpoint. In my son was learning about the 30s and the Great Depression. And I said to him, hey, you know that big, I don't know why they call it a mural, it's really a big painting. Do you know that big painting / mural that hangs in your cafeteria? He says, yeah. And I said, that it was paid for through a WPA project. So back in the 30s, when they were trying to get the government primed or the economy primed, the government paid for not just roads and infrastructure and things like that, but they also paid artists to make stuff. And he went to his teacher, and he told his teacher, and his teacher's like, yeah, we were going to talk about that. And it was a nice kind of learning experience. I've also, every time I'm in that cafeteria, whether it's for like, if there's a community event or something like that, we'll be there. I always take a few moments to look at it and think, God, that's a pretty cool thing that they have. It's a real nice piece of history.
History, right.
And then we got at the end of the week, we got an email from the principal saying that there was had been a long simmering argument over it, or discussion, not even an argument, and that there's a group of students at the school, a social justice group, that felt that the mural did not, you know, it's all, like you said, it's all white. It's a very idyllic winter scene, exactly what you said.
Skating around the pond.
Skating and sledding, and there's nothing offensive about the picture other than what's not in the picture, which is that Oak Park, the school, is the number something like 52% white at the school. So that's not, I mean, it's the majority, but it's not a huge majority by any means. And that all the kids are white, and it reflects, it was made, I think, in 1937. It very much reflects the times that it was in. It wasn't always, I mean, the school doesn't date back to that far either. So it wasn't always in the school. It was somewhere else. But they decided, the school, with this committee of students, and I think either a parent or a teacher, decided that they were going to take it down, which they have. And that has caused not a huge controversy. I mean, I don't think it's on par with the Mueller report, but like, it's something that people are. And at first, my opinion was, this is ridiculous.
Right.
Come on, there's nothing offensive about it. But I talked to my son, and my son was like, "Well, wait a minute. I know, you know, you like the painting, Mark, but you like other paintings too." And the kids, he said, he felt presented a pretty interesting, and he thought, he believed it, defense of taking down the picture.
It's interesting, and obviously we can get in bigger questions about, you know, what to do with historical piece, because this is really the same, in the same family of the arguments about the Confederate statues and things like that.
Yeah, I would say it's different, but it is in the same family.
Right.
It's a, you know, the Confederate ones stand for something that is, you know, much different than what
I think an Oak Park historian came out and said this is similar to book burning, or is that what we're doing? That was one of the quotes that came out of this article.
Yeah, Eric Zorn had an article about it.
Yeah, and I just wonder, you know, at the end of the day, it's very interesting, and I think it was Lee Bay, it was someone on Facebook who was talking about, you know, you could just do a little research, and there were African Americans who lived in Oak Park at the time. And the question and the issue with this mural is, was there erasure? Was there this idea that we're not going to recognize this community because that's not who we think Oak Park is, and therefore eliminating them from history?
My guess is no. My guess is, and first of all, I think I read another stat that it was very, very small. My guess is that it was just a woman painting what she thought of. I mean, think about like the Peanuts, like they introduced a black character eventually, but it wasn't like George Shultz was thinking, I'm just going to have white kids. He just didn't think about it.
Right.
But my son's point, which was a point that others were making that he bought into, was, you know, a kid was saying, I come into school, none of my teachers are black. I don't see any black adult role models throughout my day. I mean, there are black teachers at the school, but not in this kid's team. And then I come to the cafeteria and I look up at this scene of kids who, whether directly or not, in some way represent the student body, and I don't see myself. Mm-hmm. Now, the suggestion that others have made, which I think I buy more, is that keep that up. It's an important piece of history, and then have another
painting
elsewhere in the building or elsewhere in the room that says, look where we've come. Yeah. Look where we're at now.
Nice compromise. Mark Baser, you can see him in the show I'm Ambivalent Towards the 90s, which is at the Hideout at what time on Friday?
It's at 6:30.
6:30. Of course, you can check out the interview show, which is also at the Hideout, and on WTTV.
And we have a podcast, too.
We have a podcast as well. That's
so
right.
If I would love if people checked it out. It's the interview show with Mark Baser, and they can subscribe and hopefully like it.
Great. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.